Since the 2011 Four Corners expose of animal abuse in the live export industry, those in the trade have been working hard to rebuild its reputation and their livelihoods. That's why it's probably no surprise that animal welfare is the catchphrase at a live export industry conference underway in Indonesia, where local agribusiness companies are being encouraged to invest in new technology to improve conditions for animals. The expo is showcasing the latest technology, equipment and supplements available to operators in the live export industry working with Australian cattle. Our reporter Carl Curtin is there.
In a large exhibition hall at a Jakarta hotel, hundreds of delegates are roaming the stalls, chatting with agents and inspecting equipment.
Chamber, and then what happens is this penetrating bolt, or in this case here it's a mushroom head, so it's only for halal. It only knocks the animal out, doesn't penetrate the skull. It fires it onto the animal.
They've come to hear ways they can improve the welfare of the animal, the Australian cattle, exported by the hundreds of thousands to Indonesia each year. It's part of the Live Export Program, known as LEP, run by Meat and Livestock Australia and LiveCorp. Welfare is very much the buzzword here, being embraced by those attending. Businesses like BlueScope Lysate, which builds feedlots and abattoirs in Indonesia, are highlighting the animal welfare benefits of their products and services. General Manager Ardi Gunnady says his sale pitch now involves talking up the airflow and heat management of his buildings, which is something that resonates with the clients.
We follow the standard from MLA, Meat Livestock Australia, and we found that our materials, especially if we talk about the material steel, it's also can provide what the standard we should be. Means that if we combine our material become the buildings, it fits on the standard of MLA.
What's the uptake been like, not just here at the exhibition, but generally speaking, how many of these get built? How many people are building them to animal welfare spec?
We just start from one client, and then another client. It is just a start for us. We found that this market is increasing.
Warren Farr from Kentmaster Equipment Australia is at the expo to talk up the benefits of animal stunning at the point of slaughter. He says a stronger focus on stunning since 2011 has assisted him in selling more gear to abattoirs.
In the case of pre-slaughter stunning, no matter what country you're in, we're trying to improve through OIE, MLA, Australian Government, Department of Agriculture, animal welfare standards, and by doing so, by having this system in place where they prefer pre-slaughter stunning, it does make it easier for us to get out there and explain to people, you really should have this. You don't have to, but you really should. And that way it makes it a lot easier for us, yes.
So would you say that this extended focus on animal welfare is good for business in terms of operators like yourself?
Yeah, it's very good, but the biggest thing you get out of it is the potential it has to ensure good animal welfare practices throughout the world. There's a lot of people out there now who don't want even live export to take place. And if we can try and show them that we are, and the people receiving the live cattle are doing the right thing as far as animal welfare goes, it helps the whole industry, not just me or anybody else.
Delegates have come to the LEP Expo from all over Asia, some with decades of experience in the livestock sector, and others with very little. According to LiveCorp, since 2011, the program has trained over 3,800 people working in feedlots and abattoirs. Chairman David Gelvin says the expo highlights the support available to those working with cattle throughout the supply chain.
We see it as an example of getting better practice, getting more knowledge through the industry. We see it as a learning tool. We see it as a collaborative tool. We've got the Vietnamese delegation here. We've got 20 people from Vietnam. So they want to see what's going on in Indonesia. They'll be taken around to feedlots and abattoirs, etc., to see best practice here. So really it's just an extension of LEAP, being more public, being more out in the open, and people sharing their ideas, their goods, their services with the industry, not only Australia and Indonesia, but outside with Vietnam.
Listening to some of the presentations at the expo today, it appears as though a company or an operator who has something to offer in terms of animal welfare they're really embracing that as a sort of a business pitch. It's kind of popular to be involved with positive animal welfare outcomes.
Yeah, no, I think this is what it's all about. The expo, the people, they are interested in animal welfare outcomes. Good animal welfare outcomes, in the end, give good dollar returns. The animals are healthy. So it's an investment not only in the welfare, but it's an investment in the commercial sense. They're not juxtaposed to each other, they're actually complementary to each other. So, and I think you find that it's now been building here in Indonesia since 2011. People have got a great pride in animal welfare. They want to know about it. Companies have embraced it. They want to be over here trying to sell their services and their goods to promote good animal welfare. And it's a good economic benefit for Indonesia as a whole, and of course back to Australia and the producers.
And that's Live Corp Chairman David Galvin speaking with Carl Curtin in Jakarta. Australia's poppy industry is on the brink of rapid expansion, with cultivation of opium poppies now approved in Tasmania, Victoria, the Northern Territory, and soon South Australia. The industry says Australia makes 50% of the world's legal narcotics, and because of the surge in pain medications like morphine and codeine, the value of that industry is only set to grow. Currently, there are just three processors approved in the country, and only one of them, TPI Industries, is locally owned. In a rare opportunity, our reporter Cassandra Steith toured the TPI plant near Melbourne in Victoria.
I'm inside just one of three locations in the country that turns beautiful poppy flowers into narcotics. I'm here to learn how it's done, but I can't give too much away. The security is so tight that I can't even describe to you their security measures. Even small details could compromise their security. What I can say is the facility is on the outskirts of Melbourne and that the inside is lined with white hallways and CCTV cameras every 8 to 10 metres. I'm being watched very closely by a security team, and with me walking through the corridors to the poppy crop receival site is CEO of TPI Enterprises, Jared Ritchie. Jared says out of the very few invited out to the facility, not many people are allowed to walk through these doors.
As few as possible as a rule, and as you can see here there are large mountains of straw. So some of our varieties here are high thebone, some are high oropavin. Some have been de-seeded, some are yet to be de-seeded. And we're walking over to one of the piles that is our new harvester, just to give you an idea of the difference between what the industry normally harvests, which is the large mountain to our right, and then compared to this harvesting here.
And it's a very strong smell. It smells a lot like mulch?
Yeah, a little bit. That'd be a good description. So this is what would be a normal type of harvest. So you can see there's a combination of the poppy capsules, which we're interested in, and that's where the alkaloid is present.
The huge piles of harvested poppies that are in front of us in the gigantic warehouse are a lightish brown colour and very strong smelling. The crop looks like a bulky straw, and the capsules that Jared's speaking of are the flower heads of the crop, which are about the size of a 20-cent piece. And then, of course, you've got your more traditional poppy seed.
Now, that poppy seed goes into the culinary market, which people have on their muffins and bakery items. So the difference between that, which is normal traditional harvesting technology, and the pile that you can see over here is quite obvious. There's a significantly lower amount of the stem, which means the average alkaloid content of this pile is nearly 60% higher than that pile. And there's no difference in the variety.
So this is a lot more valuable to you?
Correct.
Surrounded by countless mountains of pulverised poppies, Jared says the next step of the process is putting the straw-like material through a very slow conveyor belt that crawls along like a snail.
We've now left the straw storage area and we've walked into our main manufacturing area. And as you can see, Cassandra, it's very much a more industrial process setting, high degree of automation with touch screens. The first step is that we take that straw that's moving on that slow conveyor and we mill it very, very fine. Once that milled poppy straw, it is then taken into our extraction area here.
Once it's milled, it's put through technology similar to a coffee plunger, and by using water, the precious alkaloid is extracted. And I can't see through the equipment, but Jared tells me the liquid that it's turned into is like a big brown jus.
At this point now, the the product that we're making, the opiate, is now in a liquid phase, and it remains in a liquid phase until you can see the large white internal building, which is our clean room and our pharmaceutical area. So it no longer is a solid until it's internalised again. So the straw goes into this first section and then it comes out as waste poppy straw, which we call XPS, extracted poppy straw. This has no narcotic material in it, and this goes back onto farms as a good carbon loading and gets tilled back into the soil. At this point here is our large evaporators. We then reduce the total volume of that liquid that we've extracted. We remove further impurities and then it gets pumped along the pipe against that wall into what's our controlled atmosphere pharmaceutical area.
Thereafter, the material goes through a further batch drying process, and omitting the technical chemistry, there you have raw narcotic material. Core to the process is minute-by-minute optimization, which is where chemists like Arto Abreu come in handy.
Yeah, so I'm working at the moment in trying to optimize one of key steps in our process. So from the chemical point of view, try to increase the efficiency, maintaining quality. You always try to achieve better than what you have before.
What's interesting about the Australian opiate processing game is that there are just three players in the country. There's Sun Pharma, which is India's largest pharmaceutical company. There's Tasmanian Alkaloids, who's currently owned by Johnson & Johnson. And then there's TPI, more modest in size and Australian-owned. According to the industry, Australia makes 50% of the world's legal narcotics. And South Australia will soon join Tasmania, Victoria and the Northern Territory in legalising the cultivation of poppies for opiate production. TPI sees this as an enormous opportunity, citing huge growth due to the lack of access in pain medication in the developing world. Someone who sees things very differently is the CEO of Sun Pharma, Jeff Zippel. He says the industry is very conservative and there is little room for growth.
Now, look, the industry is actually very conservative. It is very, very tightly regulated. The International Narcotics Control Board, which is part of the United Nations, look at future growth, future market requirements and current industry supply and demand. And the most recent INCB report indicates that, in fact, supply capability exceeds current demand, and they view that as being the position into the future based on our assessment of that report. So we see no substantive growth in the industry above what we call normal industry supply-demand fluctuations.
I guess what's confusing there is if you don't see that much growth in the industry, why are you in the game?
Well, we've been in the game for a long time. I guess for us, it's an integral part of our business. We have a number of international customers that rely on our product to be able to manufacture pharmaceuticals, typically in pain, but in other sectors as well. We're good at what we do. We've invested an enormous amount in research to be best in world.
How does this image of growth position the reputation of the opiate industry in Australia?
We need to be quite cautious on this. The industry is, as you can imagine, we're dealing with controlled substances. It's very tightly focused, and we have to show market leadership given both our position and the Australian position in the overall world market. Industry participants understand the realities of demand in the market. They understand what investments may be made by companies within the industry. So those with expertise have a very clear knowledge on what future demand will be. If we're seen to be making statements that don't align with global understanding, it diminishes our professionalism and our reputation.
Jeff Zippel, CEO of Sun Pharma, one of the other poppy processors operating in Australia, and Cassandra Steith with that story. That's the program for this week. Thanks to John Jacobs for technical production. Next week, a look at what's happened with Northern Development since some significant funding last federal budget almost a year ago. I'm Edwina Farley. Stay with us on RN.